1-800-272-3900. 1-800-272-3900.
This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Don Sola. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Sola on AM 790 WPRV.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. This is Don Sola, delighted to have you sharing your drive time home with me. This is Thursday, and we're starting out a brand new month here in the world of money and finance. The Dow Jones Industrials, interestingly enough, after rising more than 150 points earlier in the day, ultimately closed down 431 points. The 30-stock index, known as the Dow Jones Industrial Average, fell literally as much as 586 points at its worst point. But it did, in fact, come back. Now, lots of different reasons. I guess when you get to this point in the market where you're challenging, you know, the records within the market, you know, all-time highs and all that other cool stuff, without, you know, offering a really solid fundamental analysis of what's going on behind the scenes in the economy and the market, both of which are pretty darn good at this stage based upon most technical evaluation, it surprises that the market doesn't like. And of course, when there's that little bit of anxiety about, you know, just how high can the market go, and we've gone literally 9 years without a recession, you know, with a brand new, lots of changes taking place. And I think that makes people nervous. A brand new Fed chair, Jerome Powell, was speaking for the first time yesterday and today to Congress in what they refer to as the biannual Humphrey Hawkins testimony, in which he gets up and just gives a general consensus outlook of what the economy is doing and what the Federal Reserve, which handles most of our nation's monetary policy, and frankly, probably is responsible for most of the monetary policy of the world because so many other countries, big players in the global financial markets, follow the U.S. and they track the attitude and the opinions and, of course, the motivation of the Federal Reserve as if it was their own decision-making body. But, you know, they follow it closely. When we came out of recession back in 07 and 08, we began a process of quantitative easing, a program that was very aggressive, of course, to the degree of trying to pull an economy that was in literal meltdown in 07 and 08 and pull them out of that and into an environment where over the next 8 or 9 years, the economy grew grudgingly, grinding, but about a 2% growth rate on average each and every year, which allowed this market from 09 through the present to offer the kind of growth and returns that we've enjoyed over this last 9 years. Now, all of a sudden, especially with a brand new administration in Washington, trying to evaluate, well, what are the prospects of an administration which, you know, by philosophy is going to be different than the previous 8 years? There'll be arguments, obviously, until historians decide on it later. I mean, many, many years down the road, they'll look back and say, well, this was either a great change or not so great. Presidents of the United States have this tendency to tout their successes and, of course, ignore their failures. I doubt Donald Trump will be any different than other presidents in that respect, maybe more so, to the degree that he likes to take credit for anything that good that happens in the economy around him. And, you know, whether you're a strong supporter of this president's policies or not, you have to agree that presidents have the right to do that. I mean, it's on their watch. My bigger concern is not so much whether the president gets credit for the economy or the market, but will he be recognized if he does things that screw it up? Today was one of those. I think this is really what makes people nervous, is to say, well, what can this president do? What can this administration in Washington do that could take what is a generally favorable condition right now, continuing low interest rates, a fairly accommodative policy out of the Federal Reserve, our monetary policy, an economy that is continuing to grow, earnings that are higher, and quite frankly, corporate America holding on to an extraordinary amount of cash on their balance sheets. In other words, nothing but opportunity value out there. And I guess markets get to a point where they just look at that and they say, geez, everything is so damn good. What can happen to really screw this up? And that's what they're looking for. It's sort of like, yes, we're keeping the ear to the ground, but we're not particularly trusting. Yes, we're delighted to have markets that are rising the way they did. We're delighted that last year we were up double digits. Can we give the president credit for that? Well, he's the president. You have to. It's his first year in, and, you know, who knows? Some of his policies, or at very least the expectations And this is something you have to think carefully about. Is it something that the government does that drives the market higher? Or is it potentially speculation and expectation of what the government and, the White House can do, might possibly do, the success they may achieve? Has it really happened yet? Well, we're seeing the early symptoms of a pro-growth, pro-business, declined regulation environment. Now, the real issue will be is how does this economy, this market, and this environment behave over the long term? But in the short term, it's front-end loaded. It looks pretty good. There are individuals out there, lower-income people, who, if they get an extra $15 or $20 in their paycheck because of a minor change in the tax code, they're going to look at that and be pretty happy with that. I mean, it's an extra $1,000 a year, maybe. Who knows what they can or can't do with that? But, it's something that is noticeable. What the long-term impact of that will be is different in terms of economic or consumer behavior. But in the end, it's the real benefits from the tax bill, and I'm one of those crazy people that read the darn thing, is ultimately going to be to the benefit of individual households that earn over $250,000 a year and small businesses and corporations. I mean, and the reason that that's the issue is that those are permanent cuts in the tax code, permanent changes. In order to squeeze this bill into past the regulatory minefields that the president would have to deal with Congress in order to even get it make it passable by the House and Senate, they wanted to derive benefits for lower and middle income people, but they knew in order to do that and make it actually pass muster with the economic watchdogs out there, the budgetary watchdogs, they had to make those moves temporary for the lower and middle income people. So for the first couple of years, maybe just enough, I think the president was thinking anyway, just enough to get past the midterm elections. I mean, right now, the worst thing that could possibly happen to Donald Trump, well, I imagine there's a lot of things he's thinking about right now, but one of the worst things from a purely, broadly political perspective is to lose the House of Representatives to the Democrats in the upcoming elections. If that happens, you put into question a great many of the things, a great many of the plans, a great large part of the strategy that this president and his supporters have at this stage coming in. And some people think, well, that's probably pretty important. That's maybe the end result of this. In some people's minds, they say, well, that shows that the system works, because you can't have somebody who wants to come in and burn the house down when ultimately in the end it's our responsibility to protect the house. But there are systems in place, including our election cycle, which is intended to rectify mistakes that are made perhaps in the 2016 election. If ultimately it's determined by voters, national voters, that election in 16 was clearly a mistake and we've now seen the result of it, here's the problem you're going to get past. Donald Trump's a salesman. You can't deny it. This is what he is. It's who he does. It's what he would arguably say that is who he is. And he has the ability to get up and stand in front of a crowd like that stand-up comedian and read the crowd. Know what buttons to push. I think he's sensitive to the fact that lower middle income people have a lot of fear that they carry with them on a daily basis, and he knows that, hey, maybe I'll feed into that. But whatever it is you do, whatever your philosophy is, and the problem is I don't think he's that big. He doesn't have much in the way of a genuine ideology. He's got a couple of key things he'd like to do, a couple of key successes he'd like to put on his ledger. But I'm not really sure. He's certainly not a Republican. He never was in the past. Now all of a sudden he is. But, the conservatives, genuine conservatives that I know, people especially who are fiscal conservatives, look at what's happening here and they're outraged. They're full of fear and they're outraged on a lot of levels. So I don't know how this is going to shake out going forward. But for right now, the markets liked what they saw last year. But now this year, entering a new year, they're looking at a few of the changes that are occurring and they're dealing with the uncertainties that surround those changes. And the market, as you could see from the last several weeks of volatility, including today, the market doesn't like uncertainty. And suddenly the president's talking about tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. That's going to be problematic, and we'll be talking about that certainly over the days and weeks to come. Hey, folks, I welcome you to the Money Talk program. It's the first day of a brand new month, coming to the close of the first quarter of 2018, and I'm Don Sowell. We'll be back with more Money Talk.
Sponsored by Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Cold or flu, fever is flu's trademark. The Exergen Temporal Scanner is the number one thermometer pediatricians recommend. Protect your family with technology backed by over 70 clinical studies. Exergen.com.
At Pronzi, we've built our reputation providing an uncompromising level of service and elegance. Every detail carefully considered, whether it's a grand wedding or a holiday party. When the hard work of preparation is over, it's all about your celebration. The joy and laughter of each guest. The ultimate compliment of satisfaction. Add an extra dimension of quality, service, and value to your wedding. Call Pronzi Catering and Events today for a personal consultation. 401-383-3631 or visit pronzi.com.
Why do we call it small business? Why not agile business? Nimble business? Dance circles around the big bulky behemoths business. Uma Office, the small business phone solution, has a virtual receptionist to direct calls to the right extension and a mobile app to help you answer while away from the office. About all that's small really is the price, starting at only $19.95 a month. Visit uma.com, that's O-O-M-A, or call 866-649-9377 to find out more. Uma, the phone your small business deserves.
Hey, my name's Brant. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't I do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome, MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7, so if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
My backyard.
Oh, your backyard. Try telling a bear that.
I did, and this bear talked back.
Talking bear, that's rich.
No, wait, it was Smokey Bear.
Smokey?
Why didn't you say so?
I did say so.
Continue.
I was burning yard waste.
No, boy.
He told me to burn legally and responsibly, and to remember that if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
And as always, he's right. You know, 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Yeah, I know that now.
Thanks to me.
Actually, thanks to Smokey.
As usual, the talking bear gets all the credit. Always burn responsibly and contact your local fire department for open burning regulations. Because 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program, everybody. I am Don Sowa, delighted to have you here with me. If you got the time and if you're in a safe place, want to give me a call here and you have a financial question you'd like to ask here on the Money Talk program, our local number is 437-5000. And if you're outside the immediate area, our toll-free number is 888-345-0790. Meyer is here. Let her know. Let her know you're in a safe place, and we'll get you right through quickly. If not, just give her the question. She'll plug it into my screen, and we will try to address your question of interest before you reach your destination, if at all possible. The S&P 500 today was down about 1.4%. That was pretty much across the board. You saw the markets doing right in that range. That pretty much erasing most of the gains we saw so far this year. Although we're only 2 months in, but industrials were the worst performing sector in the S&P. It also briefly broke below one of these averages, moving averages that are so important to some analysts that are out there, the 100-day moving average, which is a key technical level. NASDAQ Composite was down 1.3%, dipping below its 50-day moving average. Now, the big issue today, amongst everything else, is, well, you have the second day of testimony from Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chairman. I don't think there was anything new in that testimony. I mean, it's the second day. He offers some guidelines in advance, written copy, and then also answers, has a pretty substantial Q&A segment for the legislators who are sitting there And they ask a lot of interesting questions. And I think he was pretty good at it. I think he'll get better at it as time goes on. This is his first Humphrey Hawkins testimony. Janet Yellen would say herself that the first couple of times she did it, it was both intimidating, and you have to measure carefully how government officials, such as congressmen, senators, as well as the markets themselves, as they listen to what you're saying. I think he'll become hypersensitized to the fact that they're listening to every little quirk, which how he combs his hair on a given day. Greenspan used to, the Fed chair used to joke about people would watch on the day he was giving testimony in which hand he was carrying his briefcase, and that would be indicative of what he believed was going to be happening in the market. Again, trying to read too much into things. But the U.S. today also offered some non-monetary impetus for movement in the market, not in this case to the upside, but to the downside, and that was the possibility of setting tariffs. This is a fiscal move by the president, tariffs of 25% for steel and perhaps 10% for aluminum. It's kind of unclear whether they will really apply to all imports or simply to some metals that are coming in from certain countries that the president wants to punish for dumping what they think of as cheap steel or cheap aluminum into the U.S. market. And obviously, anytime you start talking about the concept of protectionism and tariffs, the potential for nightmares and crises within the global trading markets become evident, and that can really spook the stock market as well. The biggest wild card would actually be a trade war, which is always what the potential is and what one of the concerns is. And nobody should be excited about that, according to analysts who were commenting today on the president's commentary related to potential for tariff. Noted, there's been some pressure out there also seen in stocks is in response to the news on those tariffs, so people shouldn't be really too shocked. Shares of Ford Motor Company were down 3%, and General Motors fell nearly 4%. Companies like Boeing and Cummins and Johnson Controls and United Technologies, which are other users of steel and aluminum, also helped lead the market lower. So companies that use these products in the market in general, I mean, we think we're trying to punish companies or protect against manipulation of pricing by foreign governments, which is what the tariff programs are intended to do. But ultimately what they do is there's a battle overseas. They raise prices, we raise prices, they put tariffs, we put tariffs. All of a sudden the price of the asset itself, steel and aluminum, stuff that we do really need in the production process, even in our slower and limited manufacturing sector here today in the United States, the real issue of do we really need the prices of these metals, these base assets, to be going up 20, 30% maybe. So steel stocks like U.S. Steel, AK Steel, they all, in general, as much as you might wonder on it, they all actually posted some decent returns today. Wall Street also digested some fresh testimony from the Fed chair. Powell spoke before the Senate Finance Committee in today's market. Yesterday, he was before the House of Representatives. And after delivering prepared remarks, of course, he went to the Q&A, and he says that we don't really see any strong evidence yet of a decisive move up in the area of wages, which would be considered part of what we call financial inflation. We see wages by a couple of different measures trending up a little bit, but most of them actually continuing to grow at about a 2 to 2.5% rate. Nothing in that suggests to the Fed chair or the other members of the Open Market Committee that wage inflation is at a point of acceleration. So the concern people have is if we are in a process of either tightening, raising interest rates at, say, the Fed fund level, or if the Fed's monetary policy inversion of stimulus, in other words, in this case, trying to sell bonds and mortgage-backed securities that they're holding on their balance sheet in the general open market, that would, of course, push the pricing of those same assets lower because you now have a lot of supply moving into the market. And when the value of the bonds goes up, the price goes up, the dividend yield will, as part of that, will, as those, put it this way, as there's too much supply in the market, the price of those assets goes down, and that means the dividend yield rises. So there'll be some areas that benefit from that and others that do not. The Dow Jones, the S&P, and the NASDAQ all hit session highs on the back of that comment today, and then they retreated. We mentioned it was a highly volatile day. Earlier this week, Chairman Powell testified before the House Financial Services Committee, where he indicated market volatility won't stop the central bank from raising interest rates. Sort of like saying, we're not really concerned. It's not our primary concern to worry about what happens in the stock market. We're here to manage inflation, and we're here to manage the cost of living, ultimately, and to keep some level of control on employment. That's the primary mandate of the Federal Reserve, and it's not to worry about whether the stock market is doing well or not. Although the president may not completely believe that, because he has been touting the gains that we enjoyed last year at the beginning of this year as being indicative of the success of his policies. So needless to say, he would hate to see any environment, I would imagine, that would push the stock market down, because then it would not be measuring a positive result for the Trump policies at this stage of the game. Now, it's really too early to make any sort of comment or prediction on the tenure of the chair. It says he's brand new out there, but we do suspect that Chairman Powell will be a little bit more willing to maybe ruffle some feathers on the committee and use the power of his seniority to impose policy on other members of the Open Market Committee, the Federal Reserve. Now, if this proves to be the case, then we may actually see rather more obvious aggressive dissent going forward than what we see right now. When we hear or listen into the minutes of these Fed meetings that they have, which always come out several weeks after the actual meeting takes place, you start to hear some of the background conversations, that whether it's debates, whether it's arguments, or whether it's agreement. You start to hear that. And it gives you, instead of hearing just the words themselves and the language, you start to get a feel for what these members of the Open Market Committee are really bringing to the table and some of the biases that they carry in relationship to inflation. And that will determine an awful lot what Fed policy will be and how it affects the accommodative nature of our system or the lack of accommodation that we now have. But right now, I consider ourselves to be still in a very accommodative monetary policy. And regardless of it's the interpretation of whether I'm right or not indicates and feeds into this whether or not we're in a more volatile environment than usual. Now, Powell's testimony from earlier this week sent stocks reeling as well. The Dow closed nearly 300 points down on Tuesday, while the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ each fell more than 1%. Now, Art Hogan, who's a chief market strategist at B. Riley FBR, he said that the market's trying to find its footing with this new Fed chair. Remember, the market's made up of people making decisions about money, whether to buy or sell. And that's one of the reasons it's volatile. It's not as much of a stock market as a people market. And he believes that we'll get a better, Hogan in this case thinks we'll get a better idea of what monetary policy will and can look like after the March Fed meeting. So taking the words of the Fed chair and maybe some commentary from other Fed governors, which you'll be hearing plenty of over the weeks ahead, and then applying the actual actions. What are they actually going to do in terms of raising rates? The consensus being that probably three increases in the Fed fund rate during 2018, with the understanding that if circumstances warrant it, there could be a fourth increase in the Fed fund rate, making money more expensive. Now, stocks closed quite a bit lower yesterday, and futures on Thursday pointed to an extension of those losses before rebounding after the release of economic data. So what's happening is here you get speculation that's driving the markets down, and people are nervous about the Federal Reserve, they're nervous about the president and what he's going to be doing about potential tariffs on aluminum and steel. I mean, all things that may not necessarily be good for the economy. If it means anything, a great many advisors to the president, members of his economic forum and outside advisors that the president tends to listen to typically, they're all stepping forward today and saying that this whole idea of tariffs on key metals like steel and aluminum would not be a good idea for domestic pricing, because ultimately, in the end, the products that we as consumers in the United States purchase each and every day will become increasingly more expensive, and that's inflationary. So the Commerce Department said consumer spending rose about 0.2% in January. Personal income rose about 0.4%. Now, the core personal consumption expenditure index, PCE, advanced about 1.5% on an annualized basis, right around in line with what people were expecting. So Thursday marked the first trading day of this month, I mentioned, and in February, and the Dow and S&P snapped a streak of 10 straight monthly gains. So February is the first month we've had, though. We really didn't have gains, while the NASDAQ posted its first monthly decline in about 8 months. Hey, folks, it's halftime here on the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa. I'm delighted to have you here with us on the show. And what we're going to talk about when we come back in the second half of the show is what investors can learn from the stock market correction and volatility that we've just experienced. We'll be looking at some writing from a financial writer named Adam Schell from USA Today. I'm Don Sowa, and you're listening to Money Talk.
Time to save and save big at Sears Hometown Store in North Kingstown. It's the Owner Independence Day sale. 3 days only. Now through Saturday, March 3rd. Get an extra 10% off almost everything. That's 10% off sales prices. Refrigerators, washers and dryers, lawnmowers, grills, tools. Take advantage of this huge savings at Rhode Island's premier Sears Hometown Store in North Kingstown. Take it home today. No credit required. Locally owned and operated by Tom Iacobucci. 6655 Post Road, North Kingstown.
This is the Bloomberg Green Business Report. Climbers on North America's tallest mountain may have to start packing out more of their poop after a researcher determined a glacier in which much of it has been dumped over the past decade probably is not decomposing the human waste. A glacier geologist calculates that 36,000 climbers between 1951 and 2012 deposited 152,000 to 215,000 pounds of human waste along the most popular route to Denali's summit. For more than a decade, the National Park Service has required that climbers keep waste off the Alaska mountain surface. Mountaineers captured the waste in biodegradable bags and pitched it into deep crevasses on the glacier. However, the new research finds the waste will never be exposed to extreme temperatures and disintegrate, and likely will reappear downstream as stains on the glacier's surface. Park Service officials say the dumping of human waste that does not decompose is not a practice they want to continue in a national park and a wilderness area. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
When hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need to get to a short list of qualified candidates fast. That's why you need Indeed.com. Daryl is hired with Indeed.
Using the site saves me a lot of time. It makes my job so much easier.
Post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates using an intuitive dashboard. Your time is precious. Let Indeed help you get to your short list of qualified candidates. Post a job at Indeed.com/hire. Search for greatness. Search Indeed.
As a small business owner, don't underestimate your own courage. It took courage just to go into business. And protecting it takes courage, too. Like choosing an insurance partner with 100 years of tailoring business insurance to customers' needs. And they won't underestimate your courage, but instead will insure it.
Hiscox. Tailored business insurance for the courageous. Get a free quote. Call us at 877-388-7006. Hiscox. Encourage courage.
Gets it to Wakoli. Oak, two on the shot clock. He's going to have to fire it inside. Nick the three!
This is Mike Martin, Brown Bears men's basketball coach in the class of 2004. I would like to invite you all to the Pizzatola Center this season to see our exciting young team compete against our Ivy League rivals. Join us as we take on Penn Saturday, March 3rd at 6 p.m.
Hunsaker, shot at the buzzer! Yes!
Brown vs. Penn, presented by Mercedes-Benz of Warwick. Visit brownbears.com for game and ticket information.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And I welcome you to the second half of tonight's Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa. I'm CFP professional. Delighted to have you sharing your time with me. This is our 28th year on the air here in Southern New England. Nightly driving home with you, trying to share our thoughts and feelings with you as the world of money and finance and Wall Street itself, with all of the unique products and strategies that they offer and talk about each and every day. They offer you lots of ideas, lots of choices, and perhaps a lot of confusion along the way. What makes it as confusing as anything is, as I mentioned, suggested earlier on, the large part of the behavior of the market is attributable to the behavior of individuals, to the people themselves, those of us who make decisions within the market. And that's basically everyone, all individual investors making money, hopefully, or losing money, but making money based upon, hoping to make money based on how we feel about things. And yes, our feelings have an awful lot to do with decisions we make about money. So how much do we learn? I mean, when the markets are rising consistently and there isn't a lot of volatility, but there's a steady climb in valuations on the market, yeah, we get kind of lulled into a false sense of security. And frankly, we don't learn an awful lot. Sadly, maybe it's unfortunate, but it has to happen from time to time. There's a lot to learn from the stock market declines. When you do see a decline, A correction in the market, of course, is a decline of 10% or more from the high. Anything less than 10% is often referred to simply as a pullback in the market. You can have a number of pullbacks occur in any given year. Even in a year where the market finishes up in double digits, it can have one or two pullbacks or more during the course of the year, because short-term intermittent volatility is going to be part of the mix as well as the general long-term direction of the market. Investors who have 401k plans, who are looking to better prepare themselves for the next big move in the market, even if that move happens to be a downside move, given that we've enjoyed some rather extraordinary upside moves, all over the last 8 or 9 years. Among the things you should start doing if you're trying to prepare for this, try to prepare yourself for a continuation of market volatility. See, in my personal opinion, and again, this is just an opinion, is based upon what I've seen and I've observed and the little bit of history that I've tried to study, the environment we're in right now is supportive of a continuation of a bull market. Now, we can get pullbacks and corrections in a bull market. So a bear market would be, of course, an environment, usually that would stretch out over a period of several months, typically, but it's an environment where the market over that period of time is declining more than 20% greater than from the high. Last time we saw that was back in 2008, when the market, depending upon where you were in the market, could have dropped anywhere from 33 or 34% down to as much as 44 or 50%. Again, depended how you were invested. Frankly, I heard a lot of jokes and a lot of people snide remarks about saying things like, oh, my 401k plan became a 201k. Well, I get that, but you know something? I've been in the business a long time, and I deal with a great many people, my own clients included, as well as those of other people. And I talk to a lot of people here as the host of this Money Talk program and dealing with the other elements of the media, radio, and television. And do you realize that in 2008, based on that 08 market, I don't call that a bear market because it happened very, very quickly. But it was a more than a 20% decline, so technically qualifies as a bear market. But I consider it just a bear correction because it did happen quickly, and the market created opportunities in 09, the following year, to recover from that bear market very, very quickly. So you've got to understand, again, psychology, it means everything, how that market decline and how the media and how all of the attention that it got and the opinions that were being shared with you, how that affected your decision-making was a big deal. So, again, what do we learn from it? I guess with other things, the first thing you really need to be doing is analyzing yourself, looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, how are your nerves doing? How has your portfolio held up during the month's bout of turbulence that we've seen even just recently? Briefly pushing stocks down 10% from maybe right around January the 26th right through February the 9th. That's a 10% decline. That's the first time in 2 years we've seen a decline of at least 10%. So how did you deal with it? How did you emotionally handle it? The recent market correction, which is technically what it's qualified for, in which the Dow Jones Industrial Average suffered two daily drops of probably more than 1,000 points, that may have exposed some flaws in your financial plan, or at least your financial mentality, and of course the way you think about investing and the way you think about the stock market. Again, sometimes you have to take the time to take a deep breath and evaluate yourself as an investor, not just the market. Now, with the market stable for the moment, I mean, where you start the day down, goes up over 150 points, then drops and suddenly drops more than 560 points, and then suddenly comes back and finishes, you think it's going to finish down about 350, then it ultimately closes down about 420. And that's a lot of volatility. Something's going on. There are a lot of people out there playing silly games. The question is, will you allow yourself to be a part of that process, or will you simply sit back and take a deep breath and say, look, let them play themselves out. In the end, I'm a long-term investor. I'm not worried about what happens in any one given day or any one given trading week. But with all of that said, the Dow having recouped about half of its the losses that were part of this mix, it's time to actually plan for, I would say that, honestly, it's the time for you right now, with all the jumping around and bouncing around, this is a good time to evaluate your needs as an investor, what your specific goals are, revisit your plan. Everybody's got a plan, even if it's not a formalized plan. You get something in your head, some set of goals that you have. Part of that planning process should be to quantify those goals, understand in numbers what they really mean. How much money are you going to need to do what it is you want to do, what it is you need to do? That's what planning is all about. People should take this opportunity And this market volatility is a reminder of how markets actually behave. The folks over at UBS Financial, a guy named Brad Bernstein, he's referring to a 10% drop that stung some investors during 9 worrisome days. They've been spoiled by a really long period of low volatility and really no market corrections out there. So he's suggesting that being spoiled, lulled into a false sense of security, is problematic for investors. I agree with him. The Dow has risen 6 straight sessions and is up 2% this year after last Friday's 19-point gain, which got us up to about 25,219. Now, all of a sudden this week, volatility is back. But that doesn't actually mean that you should cover or cower in the corner in fear. Individual investors need to view the recent correction as a dress rehearsal of sorts for maybe even a bigger, more defined market swoon, such as even if it's a short term, but an intermittent 20% drop. It could certainly happen. 20% drops typically occur when you are at a period that's near a high. We're not up to the high yet, but we've approached it here. 2018, in my opinion, will likely be, and it's an opinion, not a guarantee, we will likely finish in positive territory this year. We may even do a little bit better than you were thinking you might do. If you did 15, 16% last year, though, don't expect to do 15 or 16% this year. That would be very, very unusual. I warn people that 2017 was an anomaly, a bit of an aberration, not likely to be repeated 1 year later. But I do think the volatility and the upside movement you saw at the beginning of January was a carryover from last year. But what you're dealing now is with the benefit of all that after an extraordinary year, and now that with the president and the administration and the Senate and the House, you know, kind of getting into some tough territory, all of a sudden the accomplishments on Capitol Hill and out of the White House are going to become more and more difficult, especially as the president continues to lose key members of his Oval Office staff. So, in the end, analyze your own behavior. Successful investing is a lot about be able to manage your emotions. Do a self-analysis or examining how you dealt with the market downturn emotionally and psychologically recently. It's a very useful exercise. How did you feel in the most recent market movements that we saw, the ups and the downs? I mean, when you're dealing with 1,000-point days, I mean, it's not a big deal when you realize it's barely 2% move in this market, but it's worth understanding. I mean, they're still big numbers, right? Psychologically, they're big. The reason you want to look at your behavior is it will reveal how your brain processes risk. And understanding risk is a big deal. When I evaluate an investment portfolio, the first thing I do is ask, what are the risks inherent in this portfolio based on what I know about this client? So I didn't say anything about the economy or the market or Wall Street. I said the client, understanding the client. So you got to ask enough questions. Your advisor must ask you enough questions. Or if you're self-evaluating, you've got to ask yourself enough questions. Try to understand who you are as an investment animal. First off, I mean, panic and fear are the enemies of good financial choices. Are you more inclined to panic or be fearful than to sit back and be patient? It's hard. It's not easy, but it's doable. The key is to remain as calm as you can be and avoid a freak out that really results in poor decision making. The emotions can force you to make decisions that if you had the chance to take a deep breath, focus yourself a little bit more, maybe even get some advice, not react, you may avoid making some poor decisions, such as bailing out of some very, very good holdings you might have, some very good stocks, just before the market starts to rebound. That's it. That's basically what happens. A lot of people, they freak out as the market's declining, and then when do they get out? They get out at the bottom. You ever heard of buy low, sell high? Well, this is sell low, yes, and eventually buy high. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program. This is AM 790, your home of talk and business. I'll be right back.
Sponsored by Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Cold or flu, fever is flu's trademark. The Exergen Temporal Scanner is the number one thermometer pediatricians recommend. Protect your family with technology backed by over 70 clinical studies. Exergen.com.
Selfless service is the guiding principle that drives Army National Guard soldiers to be always ready whenever disaster strikes. They are your next door neighbors and your colleagues in schools, offices, and factories. To be a Guard soldier is to stand ready to serve at all times for family, family, for community, and for country. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com or contact an Army National Guard recruiter in your area.
Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
People make your business work. But how do you find the right talent? ZipRecruiter. One click, post your job to over 100 top job boards. Then, smart matching technology instantly alerts quality candidates about your job. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
To try ZipRecruiter for free, just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Hey, my name's Brant. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't I do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome, MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7, so if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back. This is the Money Talk program. I am Don Sowa. We're talking a little bit about what you can learn from a market decline. I mean, we've just had one here. We've had upside movements from the beginning of the year. The market ran up nicely in the first few weeks of January, right through the 26th of January. And then in the 9 days that followed, the market declined. You had a bunch of jumping around, moving around, including a couple of thousand-point days. Did you freak out? I guess you got to look in the mirror and ask yourself, since it was not that long ago, how did you behave? How did you react to that level of volatility? Remember, volatility is not always bad. I mean, you can have volatility to the upside and volatility to the downside. I guess whichever way you're going depends on how you react to it, but panic and fear have always been historically the enemy of good financial choices and good investing choices. The key is to remain calm, avoid a freak out, as I mentioned before. Taking a moment to analyze your own reactions to recent market movements as an investor is really a great idea. The real test is, did you sell out of fear? Do you let fear motivate you that way? Because if you did, it may also show that you don't have a solid understanding or an adequate understanding of what the money is for. If you look at money you have, it's not just investments in general. It's the money that is used to fund those investments. That's the real question you have to ask is, what is that money for? If it's for something long-term down the road that's even hard to measure at this point because it's so far down the road, well, then the issue of what it's for is so far down the road, it doesn't really matter what intermittent volatility you experience, because the history shows you're going to have ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs. But the good news is you get typically more ups than downs, typically. The history of the market supports that. There's plenty of historical data, as much as we try to remind people that past history doesn't guarantee future performance. But guess what? History is ultimately a good gauge. And it's the failure to study history that sets us up for failure. If you did panic and dump shares in the most recent market volatility, it's a real sign that stocks may simply be too risky for you. It's not about the stock market or the economy in that case. It's about you. And by the way, there's no right or wrong in this. It's about how you feel. And feelings typically aren't right or wrong. And you really need to trim your holdings if you're in that position. Not necessarily, and you're going to measure. You're going to be measured. Don't necessarily get out. But understand that trimming may be a good idea. Raising some cash is not bad. Bulk up maybe on some lower risk types of investments like cash or bonds, if that's appropriate. But when you're doing that sort of thing, also take a little time to do your homework, just as you did, hopefully, to choose the stock investments you have. Please do some homework to figure out what kind of bonds, if you're going that route, what kind of bonds you should own. not all bonds are created equal. Not all of them react well to the types of market risks that we're in. So try to understand what you're looking for when you're supposedly looking for something defensive. Now, to avoid making rash decisions, a number of analysts, and I like this idea, say keep a financial diary or a journal, an investment journal that details your portfolio changes and the logic that you used behind them. Actually write down how you're changing your plan and why. It's behavioral finance. It's so important. Grad schools now, I mean, when I was in grad school, it was in business school, it was entirely elective to talk about socioeconomics and behavioral money management. Nowadays in grad school, go to Wharton or Harvard or any of these great schools, they're mandatory courses now. Go back and revisit your trades and your guidance in the past and see what you were thinking about at that time. How did you react at that time when past events were like this? Now, the biggest major time of this cycle would have been back in 2008. Now, it was a very unique period, and the economy was in crisis for very unique reasons. Those reasons have essentially changed and gone. So whatever drives the market up or down in a volatile fashion today is different than what we saw a decade ago. But there are still some similarities in behavior, and that matters. This strategy will actually provide some clues as to what triggers portfolio movements in your life. And folks, remember, we're talking about your money, not some other person's. It also creates a paper trail for you, which will actually help you identify behavioral patterns that could be hurting you, not helping you, when you're trying to evaluate your financial status. A lot of these analysts also advise jotting down trades you're thinking about in your diary before you actually execute them, as it will actually let you know in real time whether you're making a change for the right reasons or not. Now, you've got to focus. To really squash fears, many analysts, including those over at UBS, focuses on market performance in past downturns. I'm a big fan of facts and data, as are some analysts, and it's a great time to remind clients and to remind other people and for you to remind yourself about the history of the markets and that corrections actually occur. They're normal. They call them corrections for a reason because you're usually fixing a situation that needs to be adjusted. You're correcting your course if you're sailing or driving your boat so that you end up at the dock where you're supposed to be. They call it a correction because it's not a negative thing. During the recent slide we saw in the market, analysts have stressed that about 10% drops are normal and typically occur sometimes as often as once a year. They point out that while the Dow's 1,175-point plunge on February the 5th was probably the biggest point drop ever, that the percentage loss was only about 4.6%, which is far below the record 22.6 one-day dive that we saw back in October of 1987 on Black Monday. Analysts also note that since 1980, the market has finished higher 32 of 38 years. 32 out of the last 38 years since 1980, the market has finished higher. Now, just because stocks fall doesn't mean that your portfolio is down that much. I mean, if you have only 50% of your money in the stock market and the other half in bonds and cash, your portfolio loss is about half of what the market's loss was. That's one of the reasons why you don't put all of your eggs in one basket. And by the way, all stocks don't go up and down exactly in the same percentages and numbers either. Again, don't put all of your money in one basket, but make sure the baskets are different. Another way to keep losses in perspective is to look at them at different time points. An investor, say, had $100,000 in the Dow at the start of 2018. At the market low on February 5th, the blue chip stock index was down 8.5% from its peak, but only off 3.5% from the end of 2017, though. So even at the low this year, that account balance fell by only 3,500 to 96,500. So the Dow has since climbed back into positive territory for this year, and we've just seen another recent market adjustment today. It's like it's bouncing around a little bit. You cannot bounce around with it. You've got to be patient and thoughtful. So how would you cope with a big market downturn? I guess that's the question you've got to ask when you look in the mirror. The only way to know is to calculate how much money your current holdings could lose if, say, a bear market happened. That 20% market fall could mean a paper loss of $20,000 on a portfolio of stocks valued at, say, $100,000. A bigger fall, like, say, a 56% drop in the 2007 to the 2009 bear market over that entire length, if you were entirely in stocks, that would slash the value of your portfolio by more than half. So that person possibly did lose half their money. It's smart for investors to do a stress test on your accounts. Bottom line, don't open yourself up to more financial pain than you can actually handle. So maybe using a little bit of a journal, a financial journal or an investment journal, and writing down your thoughts and feelings and the actual realities, the data, related to market movements when you are making investment decisions. Put in writing now how you will respond to the next market downturn and stick to the plan. Make the decision when you are cold and rational because you don't want to make financial decisions that are driven by emotions. If you want to buy on a 10% dip, follow through when the next correction strikes. Know what you're going to buy in advance. Identify the companies or the funds or the sectors that you want to be in. If you still plan on being a buyer when the market's down 20%, refer to that written plan when the next bear market happens. Be prepared, know what you're going to buy and at what price, and then execute it when it actually happens. That's really solid, good planning. And in the end, watching cable business news 24/7 is probably not in your best financial interest, as the media focuses on the negativity. If it bleeds, it leads. You've heard that before. With greater intensity than talking about bullish signs. To avoid getting spooked, I tell people, stop looking at the TV, stop turning on the radio all the time, unless you're listening to the Money Talk program. It's better to avoid making portfolio decisions based on a day, a week, or even a month's worth of stock market action. The short term is a blip on the market's long-term journey. And folks, ask yourself, are you on a long-term journey, and is this money that you have part of that journey? It probably is. So make good long-term decisions. A big drop has one undeniable benefit. It lets you buy investments on sale. It's the only thing that happens. So guess what? Buy low and sell high. That's what we recommend. Hey, tune in tomorrow. Steve Beauvais is going to be here at 5 o'clock, closing out the week with more Money Talk. Have a good night.
As a small business owner, don't underestimate your own courage. It took courage just to go into business. And protecting it takes courage, too.